You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Folks, as they always say, a picture is worth a thousand words. And like Sophie said, with our hilarious photos from last week, it always is. Sophie and I, McGarvin, unfortunately, look, life got in the way. Some stuff came up, so he's not here. So it's her and I holding down the fort. But Miss Sophie Weller, how are we doing today?
I'm good. How about you?
You know what? I can't complain. It's like that awkward part between like free agency and the draft. But an NFL favorite came up today. And it is the all-glorious coach's photo, as we see here, in Orlando, Florida. It's like the most group of middle-aged, socially awkward men you could have in one photo.
And the Patriots are represented for once.
I know, right? I love how he's, like, right next to Robert Saleh as well.
Yeah, I know. It's, like, perfect.
Yeah. I also love, too, how it's, like, everyone next to, like, Saleh, like, him, Dan Quinn, and Brian Daboll look like they're undercover cops in, like, a drug ring or something like that.
It is really the funniest photo.
It is, because like I say, football, like, because football guys really, like, look, these football coaches, like, it's one of those things, they know what they're doing when they're doing something, but you get them out of their element, and it's, like, the most socially awkward thing in the world that you could see. Like, when in the sense, you know, when you're asking them, hey, stand there and take a picture, and it's just like when we were kids in school, like, you have to sit, like, awkwardly still, and they clearly don't want to be there taking the photo.
Yeah, I hated picture day.
Didn't we all? But that's the one thing with this whole owners meeting that I feel like not a lot of football people get the feel on. And when I say football people, I mean fans. Obviously, football people like you and I know the importance of these meetings because a lot of the stuff that you're going to probably end up seeing on the field come September and October gets decided upon this week. Rule changes. And the big one, too, that I'm the proponent of is the trade deadline moving back, which was first brought by the Cleveland Browns.
I agree with the trade deadline. I'm also kind of curious to see what they do about the hip drop tackle. I definitely have mixed feelings about that one because, you know, I'm all for, like, making the game safe for players and all that, but I don't know if this is maybe taking it a step too far just because this has been, like, a part of the game for so long. And also what, like, comes to my mind immediately is, like, when Jabril Peppers talked to the media about this moment during the season, he was, like, not for it at all. If I remember correctly, he was just like, you know, you're taking football and it's football. It's a part of the game. It's a physical game. Here it is. So that's kind of why I have mixed feelings about it is like, you know, I can have all these opinions myself, but I'm not the one out there like putting my body on the line and playing. If, you know, these guys are saying like, yeah, it's a part of the game. Then like, where am I to stand in their way?
So the way I look at with this as is I feel like you see this a lot of the times, like, even though, like, for example, March Madness is in the background right now. There's rumors of expansion. Obviously, college football expansion is something where they did overkill in. I feel like the NFL with a lot of these rules, it's the same sort of thing. Like, we've seen it with roughing the passer where some quarterbacks know, mainly Josh Allen, that if you move your body a certain way or you do certain things, you're going to get flagged for it. And, like, all the fans know what you're doing, but the refs just see what happens in the moment. So with something like the hip drop tackle, look, I'm all for one for making the game safer. I played high school football, obviously never professionally, but like I still know the nuances of the game. And hell, that's why I'm here with this podcast talking to you right now. But I feel like doing the 15-yard penalty, it's just kind of like overkilling the situation. Instead, just teach the players to do a safer version of the hip drop tackle. Okay. Teach them, like, you know, show, hey, instead of doing this, which ended Ramondre Stevenson's season, you can do this. Hip drop tackle, like, look, it's what made Dax Angle bend sideways back in 2020 against the Giants. And also, I'd say this too, don't do a 15-yard penalty. That's just like, it's like overkill, you know? It's like, it's like, I know there's, I don't want to get too political, but it's like a small crime in America. Like, they decide to throw the book at the person and give them like 10 to 15 years. It's the same sort of thing where do a 5-year penalty. And if you're still having the problem with the same players still doing it, like, or even, you know, better idea. You know, in sportsmanlike conduct, first time you get a warning, second time you're gone. Do that. So we'll tell players, hey, don't tackle a certain way. Tackle a safer way that's going to benefit you and the person you're tackling in the long run. Because at the end of the day, these guys are gladiators. They'll go out there and put their life on the line every single Sunday for my enjoyment and for your career.
And the other thing, too, with that is just, you know, I saw this report also today that the NFL is maybe concerned about the lack of scoring, that it's, like, going down. But at the same time, I don't think that should come at the expense of the defense who are just doing their jobs. Like, you know, I get for people who might not be as into the game that, you know, they're all for the scoring and it's more fun that way. But like for people like us and others who just, you know, sit there and understand the nuances of like what it takes to play defense and those positions, making their jobs harder isn't fair to them. You know, they've worked just as hard as, you know, any wide receiver, running back, quarterback, all of that. Like, they're where they are today because they earned it. But it's, you know, they shouldn't be penalized for playing defense over offense. And that's just kind of where I stand, where it's, is that going to, you know, yes, you want the players to be safe. You don't want these players getting injured 24/7 on a hip drop tackle. But like you said, if there's a way to do it safer or something like that, maybe that's the way to go about it. Rather than eliminating it altogether, and because it could, you know, with what some of the players are saying, if they're not, the players are in favor of it, then go for it. You know, if all the defensive players are like, yeah, I think it could make the game safer, then I'm, you know, I'm totally taking myself out. But if they're the ones who are like, no, you're kind of taking a large part of us out of the game, then that's where something else needs to be happening rather than just eliminating it.
The main thing, too, as well, is I don't want the NFL to cater to the fan that watches the one game a year.
Yes.
Like, the people like us who are in the trenches who will, like, I literally tell people this. There's 5 months of the year. I just ask for my Sunday in peace. Right now on a Sunday night, look, I don't care. It is what it is. But for, like, I bring this up, too, because about a week ago, I was out with my fiance, her best friend, and then her husband. We were out for dinner. He was telling me, because he came to me for gambling advice prior to the Super Bowl, and then we're there, and then him and I were talking for a bit. He's like, yeah, the game was kind of boring. And then I'm like, it just made me spark that conversation where I'm like, for those people, the ones that found the Super Bowl boring, you know, the ones that like don't see the firework games. I feel like ever since that Bills Chiefs game, there's been a yearning for offense where everyone's, and perfect example too, whenever those two teams play, they haven't created the same firework since. They make this game seem like it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. But in reality, look, it just, you can have a good thing once, but it's really hard to do a good thing twice. That's why, and we're going to talk about this, the dynasty was such a special thing. Yeah. Meanwhile, with that comment about the one game a year person, because if they tune in the Super Bowl and instead of seeing a 25-22 game, you're getting last year, which was 38-35, which, do we love offense? Yes. But at the same time, too, a true football connoisseur has the appreciation for the defense. Yeah. That's why so many Patriots fans were ecstatic when DeMarcus Covington got the DC job, when Dante Hightower got brought in, because they know he can teach this defense a lot with a young linebacking core. And I don't want to see them ruin that as well.
Yeah, and that was a thing too. It's, I think, when people who don't know the team as well hear the name like DeMarcus Covington, like for us, we know all about him. We knew he was the top of everyone's list for defensive coordinator, just from what we've been hearing. But I was getting questions from maybe some of my friends who only like kind of are into football because they want to talk to me because it's literally what I do for a living. And I had to explain to them, like, they were like, oh, who's this guy? Because, you know, for so long, the big, you know, coordinators in here were Matt Patricia or Josh McDaniels, which, you know, everyone knew. Uh-huh. But now it's some of these younger guys getting the opportunity, and that's not, and, you know, they deserve those opportunities, but not everyone understands that. From the same level.
That's a great way to put it too, because you look at that and you see like, oh, why is this person in the position that they're in? Why this guy got hired? And even with you now, it's a talk of, so Sophie, how is work today? So now they can go, I want to understand the nuances of the defense. I want to understand what kind of player KJ Osborne is, which is a shame that McGarvin's not here because I know he was head over heels when that signing happened.
I'm a big fan of that signing as well.
I want to go down a different avenue with that signing because it created an impression from certain fans I've seen on Twitter to where I tell people that some Patriot fans have become fickle, and they're like, you don't have the right to be fickle. And I mean fickle in the sense that the team's just fans are super negative on the fan base. And someone tweeted out about the signing saying, oh, it's great to know they're not competitive this year, to where I just want to tell people, any sensible Patriots fan's not going to tell you this team's not going to be competitive this year.
Yeah.
Like, we know that, look, rebuilding in the NFL is a long-term process. I just feel like with a month to go before the draft, everyone's just so fixated now on, like, you know, oh, this team gets a quarterback, you know, they're good to go. Which, like I said, I love Houston. I just don't love how the perception they've made now to where everyone thinks, hey, you just go get your quarterback and you're good to go, when in reality,
yeah,
you know what I mean? You can and you can't. I just don't want to I just want to tell Patriots fans this. I don't want them to go into the season with high hopes and then have their hopes shattered when the team ends up only being a 6-11 or a 7-10 or maybe even 5. My whole thing is get to that 5th win, and I can at least say this year is better than last year.
I definitely agree. The only thing that I'm not so sure about is this thing that, like, the Texans have put this idea of, like, a, you know, top quarterback, just because I can't remember the exact number, but my dad had a similar argument a few weeks ago about this, how, you know, he was like, well, how many of these, like, first round quarterbacks have really done well in the league? And we went, you know, we pulled up a list, we went through it, and it was so many. It was actually a decent amount, I thought. Maybe I'm like, maybe my memory is playing a trick on me, but from what I remember, it wasn't too bad, because he wasn't totally sold on the idea that the Patriots should go quarterback either. How I feel is, looking at the next class of quarterbacks, I think it would be a major mistake not to draft one, with, and even to give away that 3rd overall pick. Because my issue with giving that away, especially to a team with a lower pick, is J.J. McCarthy totally rose his draft stock with Pro Day. He's now expected. He's won't even last top 10. He's going to, I think it was like maybe 6 was it the Giants pick? Is that, are they 6? That everyone's looking, that they're thinking they're probably going to go J.J. McCarthy. Like, he's going to be off the board quickly. If you have that opportunity to have Jaden Daniels or Drake May, either or, because I think they're both very talented in their own respects and can bring a lot to either, to any team they're on, I don't see why you don't go for it.
That's my main thing too. I feel like a lot of people too are kind of, how do I say this, PTSD'd from the Belichick era, where, you know, you're going to be used to a pick that's like either, because like the only Belichick picks in recent memory that have made sense is Mac, which, look, we talked about this last time. We know Mac didn't work out, but at the time, it was the pick to make. 2020, excuse me. I like the pick. Was it the right time, though? I don't think so. You probably could have got someone better. Mm-hmm. And then last year was the one, was like a slam dunk. Yes, you turn in the ticket for Gonzalez. This year, I feel like the Patriots are going to do a lot of sensical things in the draft, and the fan base is going to kind of awaken and go like, oh, hey, that makes sense. Like, oh, hey, we went and got a risk. Because the big question for me is more than the quarterback, because, like, I don't see them trading out. I just don't see a world where it happens. If the class was like last year, where there's only a couple of guys, like, you know, where it's like Young and Stroud, and then there's kind of a fall off after that, then you go do it. I'm not discrediting Anthony Richardson. You know, it's just the hype coming out. It was Stroud and Young, and then, like, they were here. Richardson was down here. Meanwhile, you have this year where all three of them are on the same level. I know Caleb Williams has that Easton X Mahomes hype, which, let's stop it. Everyone, no, there's no, that's a thing that's special about Mahomes. There's not another player like him. But with this year, it's just,
it's that, but it's also like, let's see him on an NFL field. Like, let's see him in an NFL game. I don't always like hearing these, putting them next up on the pedestal, or these expectations coming out of the draft. It's like, once you come into the NFL, it's a clean slate. You are out of college. You are in a completely new environment with, and no longer are you going up against guys that are probably around your age. You're going up against guys who are 10 to 12 years in the league. So it's
grown-ass men with family to feed.
Yes.
My big thing, too, is about that as well is, I'm going to say this right now, I'm really worried about Marvin Harrison Jr. going into the league, because I feel like he did nothing at the combine. Hell, no one went to his pro day, which I have some stuff to talk to you about that, because you were making your way around Holy Cross, Boston College, you and some other people I saw on Patriots Twitter, shout out Keegan, even two CFL people there as well, because the CFL is having their combine this weekend in Winnipeg, which, like, I didn't go to. There's very select people. I don't think any media really go to it, but it's just this thing now with Marvin Harrison Jr. where I look at him and I feel like he's just doing this let the film speak for himself. And then you have next year's perspective, where I don't know if you've seen this, but Deion Sanders is on this whole kick of, if Shador doesn't like the team he's going to, we're going to pull an Eli, where I'm just like, you're already setting yourself up with these like crazy, like just expectations for him. That's another story for another day. My main thing with Marvin Harrison Jr. is I'm worried about the Kyle Pitts effect happening to him, where, you know, Pitts came in the league, oh, he's the next big thing. He's this. Where I'm like, guys, tight ends need time to sizzle and marinate. Mm-hmm. It's like when people look at Travis Kelce and go, why wasn't he a first-round pick? And it's like, well, if you go back and watch his college film, besides getting kicked off the team, wasn't this player that everyone expected. That's a beautiful thing about the draft more than anything. It's besides taking your first-round picks, you know, it's finding the Puka Nakuas. It's finding the Tom Brady's. It's finding
Julian Edelman's
of the world. It's about finding the LA because they've done it so much lately. The Kyron Williams of the world. It's, hell, Chris Jones wasn't a high-value pick. Yeah. Now, I know everyone goes, like, oh, but Patrick Mahomes first round. It's just like, yes, but no one at the time, not a lot of people knew or saw this guy has something to be really good potential. So that's where the draft is truly special. That's why I always say it. Thursday, it's great if you hit on your pick. If you can hit on a bunch on Friday and Saturday, that's the home run. And I know Belichick's been criticized about his drafting, but he's brought in a lot of good day two and day three talent. Mm-hmm. The last, I would say ever since the draft went from the 2020s to the 2023. So look at the last few years. Kyle Duggar, Anfernee Jennings, Michael Wenu, Christian Barmore, Ramondre Stevenson.
I'm throwing DeMario Douglas right in there.
DeMario Douglas. This is going to be another one. Bryce Behringer as well. And even 2022, Tyquan Thornton looks like he's put in work this offseason. Two other examples I want to give because I'm very high on them going into this year is Keon White and Mapu. Marte Mapu. You know, so when you see how good you can draft, like we say, the day one pick, it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's those day two and day three picks where GMs really solidify their legacies, to be honest with you.
And I definitely think, like, you know, Belichick is criticized, and some of it is warranted. I'm not going to sit here and be like, he's the best drafter of all time, you know, never needed a GM. Like, no. There were plenty of drafts where a GM could have definitely been helpful in that case. But I do think that saying, you know, he's one of the worst or something like that isn't exactly fair to him, considering the talent he's brought in with these later round draft picks. I mean, he's brought some guys in, and he's, like you said, he's pretty solid on day two, day three at picking these guys who maybe were, like, not as well known in college, which is always the guys I almost prefer, I think, because it's less expectations, but more to prove.
Exactly. And that's how, sorry to cut you off, but that's how I even look at this year's free agency class that they brought in. The guy, and I'll say this too for everyone saying, oh, they didn't go out and get this player. Yes, but re-signing Hunter Henry, there's your tight end one. Re-signing Kendrick Bourne, that's a locker room glue guy. Everyone that's like, oh, they didn't go and get this person. Yeah, but you know what? For as much as the Calvin Ridley thing stung, and even to a thing, I don't even want to say the L'Jarius Sneed thing, just because you have to pay him all that money when you really need depth.
Sneed wasn't happening. They were just calling about him. Like, I don't think that was ever real thing that was, like, and this is my opinion. This is not, like, from anyone, but it's just, you know, and I, when I saw the Patriots name on that report, it was like, my guess is they maybe called a few times to be like, hey, what are you asking for him? But it was like, you know,
it's like when you go to a restaurant, you're like, hey, how's the fish in this? And they're like, you know, the fish is okay. You know, I wouldn't recommend it. I'm not saying they didn't want L'Jarius Sneed. It's just that, like, similar logic standpoint of, like, you know, they weren't really invested on it. It was more just doing due diligence and calling. But that's my thing with the Patriots this year, too, now, is building a culture. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be pissed off about what Elliot Wolf is doing within the building.
Yeah.
But if I'm not saying long-term success is winning another Super Bowl, if they can get number 7 in the next 15 to 20 years, I'd be more than ecstatic. I say that just because I don't want to be – because with football fandom, you have to be realistic, because right now is that time where all 32 teams have a shine of hope, when in reality I would give maybe a maximum of 5 teams a glimmer of hope to win, you know, which is Kansas City, obviously. I still put San Francisco in there.
Yeah.
I don't know his name, but your boyfriend's wonderful team, the Baltimore Ravens, and probably one of, I don't know, Detroit or, yeah, probably Detroit. And then
I'm going to throw Philly in there. I think what Philly's done this offseason, I'm not mad at. I think they could be a sneaky good pick going in.
I know. It's just, for me, the way that they fell down and the whole, it's more the reports of Sirianni not basically mentally losing himself without Dom on the sidelines was a huge red flag for me.
I hear you.
the one thing I'll say this too, because I don't know how much, I know obviously, look, you covered Hockey East. You took a, you went to a Bruins game with your dad for his birthday a few months ago. I know you're not a big Bruins. I don't know how big of a Bruins fan you are. I'm just gonna.
I'm a Bruins fan.
You're a Boston girl through and through. So obviously with the Bruins, there's a team that the Bruins have tormented the last 10 years. I love to death. That team is still the Dallas Cowboys to me. Where like this year, because I've been hearing about this, and there's actually Florio who brought it up. But Jerry Jones' version of All In, I think, is giving their fans that false hope, which they'll buy into every year, you know, being the top-rated games, always having a slew of not just primetime games, because I feel like everyone looks at the primetime slate, but having that 4:30 Thanksgiving slot when you know all eyes are on you, and having multiple 4:25, which in my opinion is the best time to play football, 4:25, because you get the 1 o'clock to yourself, and then you just ease into primetime. So that's
as a reporter, I'm not going to lie, though. I like the 1 o'clock, so I'm like home nice and early as a reporter, but I can't go from any other standpoint on that one.
No, that's fair. Like I liked the only Patriots game I've been to was a 1 o'clock kickoff, so I wasn't totally mad about that. But you know what I mean? Like it's just with Dallas, it's that perspective. There's a lot of teams where I'm like, you have to earn my trust. Like Buffalo's in that territory, which look, I know Buffalo's been in the playoffs, but eventually their fans have to get past the which Detroit's doing a very good job of not realizing, hey, we're no longer this like cute little toy you look at. It's the, hey, we have the target on our back, and people want to come into our building and beat us. I know some people are bullish on San Francisco still, which I'm just like, look, San Francisco's been to the championship game 3 years in a row. And then with some other teams, like, I don't know who else I look at so far where I'm like, you can do this, because I'll be honest with you, I don't know if they're going to go. I don't think they'll three-peat just because of how hard it is to three-peat. But when I look at the AFC West right now, I literally say to myself,
so insane.
Kansas, like, no other team is, like, every other team I look at, I'm just like, okay, Denver hasn't done anything to go, wow. Vegas, for as much as I like Antonio Pierce, I feel like the nostalgia of it's going to wear off eventually when they have a couple bad losses. And LA is going to, I'm going to keep this PG, they're going to screw around and they're going to find out, and it's either going to be a good thing or it's going to be a bad thing. I don't know what's going to happen there. So I feel like this is that year where, you know, everyone's going to pick KC to 3-peat, especially too. Look, Hollywood Brown, I wasn't a huge fan of the signing, but I was like, there's a need filled. There's a need filled right there. And yeah, so when you look at the AFC, I look at KC and Baltimore to go to the Super Bowl. Besides that, I want to say Cincinnati, but at the same time too, they're, I want to segue to Cincinnati because they've secretly recruited two new former Patriots to their teams. Like, I remember Trent Brown was obviously very public, but I remember the Cincinnati person I followed tweeted about Gesicki, and I'm like, best tight end. I'm like, wait, what? And then I Google his name. I'm like, yeah, Mike Gesicki, Cincinnati Bengal. I'm like, where did this come from?
And one thing I want to talk about with the Trent Brown signing that I think is so interesting was he did not hesitate to take a swipe at the Patriots in his introductory press conference. I mean, he laid it all out on the line, and it was along the lines of the fact that Ted Karras, another former Patriot, is with the Bengals. And I guess he walked in the building and Ted was just there like in the hot tub. And how he said it was like, in New England, you'd never find that. That once you're allowed out, you're out. You're rushing out. You want to be out of that building. That was the atmosphere for, you know, the 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
And the minute he got there, he's seeing people want to be around more and all that. So it's a major thing to say about New England in that moment. You know, we all knew Trent Brown wasn't coming back. Things were not good.
No.
This past season, he was not happy. They were not happy with him. It was just a recipe for disaster. But, you know, I feel like you don't see that very often where even if it's bad, a player's going to go and just like, not trash, but not
dirty laundry.
Yeah, he's kind of airing all the dirty laundry, which was very interesting. And then another thing I want to go back to is the Kansas City three-peat thing. And maybe this is, you know, this might be the segue into the dynasty we needed, but what I think about it is like, especially after watching the dynasty, was like, how many of these Patriots seasons did no one think they were going to win? They didn't have the team to win. They weren't the best team in the league, all this stuff, you know, especially going into that last Super Bowl in 2019 against the Rams. Everyone was like, I don't know if they can do it this year. And I just think about that where it's like, it's so hard because that was this year for Kansas City, that it's every year going in, you're not going to be able to breathe until they're officially out.
Yeah,
that's the thing. And that was the Patriots for 20 years was like, are you really going to put anything past them? Because you can't. They will find a way. Bill will find a way. Tom will find a way. Like, that was what the Patriots did. That is what they were known for. And now that's totally changed. And we're seeing another dynasty forming right now. You can, Patriots fans, you can deny it all you want. But right now there is another dynasty forming. And that is the Kansas City Chiefs.
There's one other thing I want to talk about before we segue into the dynasty, because I feel like we both have a lot to say. But with the Chiefs, I've never been anti them. It's just more the people that are already going, you know, oh, Pat's already surpassed Tom, or oh, he's already done this, or oh, he's already done that. Like, it's just more that where I'm like, okay, guys, like, simmer down. Because my thing with Pat is I want to see how he does once Reed goes, once Travis Kelce goes, because we all know. And also, I'll say this right now for anyone out there. I don't know if you're a big fantasy football person, but I feel like with Travis Kelce, his regular seasons aren't going to be as what they once were, because I think they're going to tell him, hey, Travis, we need you for 3 or 4 games in January and February. That's where you could be a psycho. Like, you know, hey, he's still going to be great. I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I'm just going to say I wouldn't be shocked if he's a player that's saving his best for when it matters most, which is what you need in sports.
Yeah, if his personal life also keeps going the way it's going with, and now that his brother's out of the league, I do think retirement in the next year, 2, 3, whatever it is a very real possibility for him. I mean, his age definitely is a factor, and he looked very good this postseason, but I could definitely see it going in the direction that you were talking about, where it's definitely more of a rest during the regular season and less plays that are centered around him. Maybe they bring in, you know, a rookie tight end or a veteran tight end into the room that's getting more of those opportunities rather than Kelce 24/7.
They did sign Irv Smith Jr., by the way.
Yeah, that one was good. I did see that. So it'll definitely be interesting to see. And the other thing about the Brady-Mahomes comparison, stop it.
Yes.
Let these guys be, you know, Brady can be Brady, Mahomes can be Mahomes. I get, you know, throwing stats on a board and being like, well, Brady did this and Mahomes did that. That's always going to be the case. But what Brady did, you can't compare it to what Mahomes is doing now.
Yeah.
They were playing, you know, when Brady started, it was a totally different time in the NFL. When Brady ended, totally different time. Their careers they have earned the respect that for their careers to not be compared to one another.
1,000%.
And that is, like, I think one of my biggest pet peeves with what people do is that they are so quick to be like, you know, well, oh, well, Mahomes threw, you know, this many yards in a game and Brady couldn't do that against this team. It's like, no, but okay, that's one game you're comparing to one game. Let's go back on the 20 years or 20 some odd years Brady was in the league. And let's look at all the, you know, all that. It's just stop. That's all I can say. This is like my long-winded PSA to just stop comparing them. They have earned the respect to not be compared to one another. They are their own people with their own careers, and they deserve that.
As I see a guy in a Boston Bruins posthumous jersey at a March Madness game right now with Grand Canyon in Alabama. I don't want to ask you your feelings about the show because obviously I feel like you're going to love it. Netflix's new show, Receiver, coming up.
That one, yes. I thought we were talking about
Dynasty. So. No, I just want to ask about this quickly just because I feel like we have to talk about the Dynasty. That, and also mention the fact, too, I had no idea that Gene Steratore was a basketball referee until 2 days ago, because I kept seeing him, like, on basketball, like, here's rules expert Gene. I'm like, he's a football guy. What are we doing? And I realized, oh, crap, he ref 24 years in college basketball. My more question about the Receivers show, because I'm going to love this one, but what are your thoughts on the cast of Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown?
It's an insane cast, is all I can say. You know, I was seeing...
I wonder if Kelce was approached.
So I will bet money that Kelce was approached. There's no way they aren't going to approach the biggest name in the NFL right now. But there was also no way Kelce was going to do it, because he knew why they wanted to approach him. They're not approaching him because they want to follow him as a receiver. They're approaching him to get Taylor Swift content. Like, sorry, not sorry. That's what they wanted. So there was never a chance he was going to do it. I remember seeing on my Twitter from all, like, the Swifties being like, oh my gosh, why isn't Kelce on this? It's like, guys, there was no chance that was going to happen. But I love the idea of doing these shows, especially with these, like, prominent positions. And I love the cast that they have lined up, because these are some of the biggest names who I feel like are, at least for some of them, are a little quieter off the field.
Yeah.
And what quarterback did was it gave you that insight into their lives outside of football. And that's also my favorite part of the game sometimes about being a reporter is that, you know, they do so much on the field, but also like they do so much not on the field.
They're human.
They're humans. They're not just, you know, here for our entertainment 24/7. So I'm definitely excited for the receiver show.
My big things is I'm interested to see is the Davante Adams perspective, considering it's been a little rough with him. Also, the one thing I kind of want to take aim at with this is because, you know, quarterback, it was, always is. You have the pinnacle, the guy trying to chase the championship, Mahomes. Yep. You have that middle card guy where he's trying to define his legacy in Cousins, and you have the guy looking for a second chance in Mariota. Yeah. Imagine if they had done that where it's just like, hey, here's, you know, Justin Jefferson, best receiver in the league. Here's some, like, random player, like, throw out there, like, yeah. Like Gabe Davis, you know? There's Gabe Davis here. McGarvin, you're going to love me for that one. And then here's, like, Tutu Atwell, for example. Like, guys where it's, like, they're up and down. I feel like with the receiver dynamic, the only thing is I'm going to say, for as much as I'm going to love to see Kittle and Debo, I wish they would have done just one 49er and given someone else that chance, you know? Like, gone to another dynamic for the show. But all in all, as long as Amon-Ra St. Brown doesn't talk a million times about all receivers taken before him in the draft, I feel like it's going to be good. I'm also interested to see Justin Jefferson because of him being hurt the entire year. Yes. You're the best player in the league. You were out for 2 months. You still went for 1,000 yards, which is psychotic. So I'm very excited to see it from that perspective.
My college roommate had him on her fantasy team, and every week he was out, I got those texts.
Sophie, tell me something. What do you know?
I know, right? It was everyone thinks the inside scoop about fantasy. I was like, guys, I don't have that. I get the injury report the same time you all get the injury reports or the inactive list. Like, I got nothing on that.
I can vouch for that for the CFL because with Toronto, like, I'll get something like 2 minutes before it goes public. So it's not like, yeah, we didn't have any sources or anything like this. So, yeah. But transitioning to the Dynasty, obviously you and I chatted about it a bit. I want to get right into things. Episode 9 may have been one of the more favorite in-depths because I liked how they focused a lot on, you know, it just wasn't jumping in from like, hey, yeah, 28-3, how it went to like, you know, Alex Guerrero working on Tom. And then it was like all this other stuff. And then, you know, eventually with 2017, they talk about the Super Bowl. Like they talk the Malcolm Butler stuff, how it like got brought to light. I know last time I was kind of critical of Tom Curran and then I got pulled back. Your advice on him made me view him in a much different light for episodes 9 and 10, where I'm like, you know what? He's bringing a very good dynamic. I think I just saw it with my fan lens on of like, hey, here's what he's doing. But the one thing I really wish they would have focused on instead of just, yeah, another Super Bowl is the fact that it was a very tall task just to get to that Super Bowl in 2018. It wasn't like, you know, hey, yeah, they just ran through everyone. No, there was some bumps in the road. There was the AFC Championship game where, look, one play could have made the difference between them not going to the Super Bowl that year and us getting Blake Bortles versus Nick Foles. So just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, I definitely had mixed reviews on this episode 9. I think some of the things they were explained how we expected them to be explained. Yeah. But I also had some issues with it. And again, this is going along the lines of what everyone has been talking about, which is that Kraft and Brady were put on this pedestal for this whole documentary while Bill was just thrown to the ground with no care, it seems like. So the part that got me originally was this whole thing about the Trump rally, how it was the letter that Bill handed him. And what got me was it was a known fact that, like, and they touched on it briefly, but, like, Bill wasn't the only one in that building.
Nope.
In the ownership who was maybe supportive of that. You know, like, Kraft was too. Brady was too, like, from what I remember. Maybe not, I don't. I
think he had it in his locker.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. So it was like, but that was maybe talked about once, but they had to do this whole segment on how Trump was handed a letter from Bill and all this. And it's like, regardless of your political beliefs, that was so biased. And you could tell from anything that was so biased. Cause it wasn't like, I think it was like Slater. That was the one who was like, okay, the three men that lead our team are the ones, like, he was the one who brought it back to like everyone, him and McCourty. Rather than but the way it was shown was just Bill. And then the second part was for way too long of that episode, it was just a complete commercial for TB12.
Yeah.
That could have been shortened a little bit. Listen, I Brady did so much. I'm never going to take that away from him. But, and I appreciate everything with Alex Guerra. I think they did a good job handling the situation with him. But that being said, it just almost started to feel like a commercial. It didn't feel like, for a little while, it wasn't like a documentary. It was like, okay, there are things that as fans, you know, you could have taken that out and we could have heard from Rob Gronkowski a little bit more, Julian Edelman a little bit more, McCourty a little bit more. Like, there were players that, at least going in, I wanted to hear so much more from that just weren't there. They were maybe given 2 seconds on the film. So that's definitely where I felt some issues with that episode.
Yeah, like the Trump letter too, where they don't, because the thing is with that letter, I don't remember it, but if they were even shown the letter, because, like, you know how last time we talked about the whole, oh, Robert Kraft and Vladimir Putin thing, which, like,
yeah,
do we need that? No. Nope. I don't like too how there was an interview that came out with Devin McCourty and with Rodney Harrison, where it's just like this whole, hey, like, you know, we taped for 5 hours in New York, we did another 2 in Boston, and they only turned the negative stuff, where, yeah, like 9 and 10 is the true Belichick funeral pieces, where it was just, you know what, like, no, I'm done with this. I'm like, we're done with you, Bill. And then, like, how you have everything to do with that. So I'm just trying to find out the true dynamic of, like, where this was going. And then eventually, like I said, I just, when I say I like the Alex Guerra stuff, I just like learning about it.
Yeah,
we need to see him aggressively massaging Tom's legs. Probably not. I love Tom, but I did, like, there's certain things where I was just like, yeah, like, we could have done without it. But then going into episode 10, when I messaged you this after I watched the episode, and I was just like, I liked how they showed the whole Tom and Bill thing, but then it's just like, you know what? They didn't bother to invite Bill over. It was, hey, we're going to call him. Mm-hmm. And even the final episode too, where I love that they showed Tom's return, but then it was just, you know what? Yeah, after 24 years, we were done with Bill. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like with Belichick, again, eventually, because he'll have his day in New England. We all know that.
Yeah.
Obviously,
deservedly so,
but I think it's going to take quite a while. I think it'll probably be at least a 5 to 10 year window before that happens. And hopefully Robert's still around to say that. And for everyone going, oh, you're wishing death on him? No, he's 82 years old. And when he crosses her threshold,
I think it would only happen like that if Kraft was here, to be honest. Because based on this documentary or this series, at least, it became very clear, at least, that it seemed Jonathan Kraft was not as keen on Bill throughout his whole time here. And I think many of us kind of had that inkling from reports or whatever it was. But to me, it just became very clear watching this. But Kraft was the one who, the only thing I appreciated about Kraft's candor in this was after the 2019 Super Bowl, when he went to Tom and said, because it was a true defensive performance. That was the first time I really felt that this was a compliment towards Bill's coaching at that point. We heard the first three, we constantly heard about how it was Bill. I feel like a little bit it was Tom's rise, but it was, you know, Bill kind of picking the best players here and there. The later years, it was all Tom, a little bit of Bill. That was the one that I felt Kraft really did well in saying, like, no, this, he won us that Super Bowl because it was a defensive performance. The defense was incredible that game. I feel like it's yesterday. I remember like watching it, and at first I was like, oh, it's a little boring. There's no scoring, because I was still at that point in my life that I was like, I wanted to see a little bit more. But now going back and watching it, it's like, oh my gosh, I can totally appreciate how incredible that game was. And when Kraft went to Tom and said, hey, we're staying with Bill for this obvious reason, that to me was the first time I truly felt that Kraft was like, not playing
either side,
but he wasn't, like, he had picked a side for 20 years, and it was the first time that he was looking at things with a clear mind. And it wasn't because because Brady, he looked at Brady as a son and all this, and Bill was just the coach. That was all Bill was to him for so long. This was the first time he was like, I'm an NFL owner. At least throughout this documentary, that's how it felt. Like, I know he's done that before. I'm not, Kraft's a great owner, like, none of this would be possible without his hirings and all that. Like, I am a fan of Kraft, don't get me wrong, but just throughout this, it definitely felt that it was a hit piece on Bill. I do agree with those opinions, and it was putting Brady on that pedestal. But for once, it was the other way around, where it was, no, I can't go without my coach. He's the one who did this.
That's exactly it, though. That you nailed everything on the head, where it's just like, Because when you look at that 2018 Super Bowl, remember the first play of the series of the game, Tom threw an interception. When you look at it, I don't know if they win if Jason McCourty doesn't knock the ball out of Brandon Cooks' hands. Yeah. The Stephon Gilmore interception, just the ability to, and even Sean McVay said, like, I think it's on record too, of that was the first time that we went and like we were stymied. You know?
I have chills thinking about the Gilmore interception. You just said that, and I like remember watching that in a documentary, like, oh my God, reliving that moment was everything.
The one thing I wish they had done too with that 2018 season, instead of focusing on this whole, oh, is it Bill, is it Tom, is the fact that that year there was no easy, that was the year there was, they weren't supposed to get there. Yeah. 2018, like I remember this vividly. Week one, they barely got by Houston, but then week two, they got killed in Jacksonville in the heat. They were embarrassed on Sunday Night Football by Matt Patricia, which, you know what, would have been fun to see. And one thing, I hate doing this, is the only moment I was actually visibly ever been like angry after a loss was the Miami Miracle. Like, talk about that, where it's like, hey, why did Gronk play that game? Why did this happen? And then even how they basically had to win out the regular season after losing to Pittsburgh the next week just to get this two seed. And then I remember that Charger game was the first time where we truly saw pissed off Tom Brady, where it was, you know, the entire, that was the, because when I look at that season as a whole, that Charger playoff game, the Chargers game and the Chiefs game were the two games where you can look at them and go, both men were responsible for this. Yeah. Tom Brady had the game of his life. Bill Belichick saw, hey, they're going to run man and zone defense the entire time. We're going to carve you up. We're going to make it hell for Phillip Rivers. They held Mahomes to no points in the first half. Or I believe it was just 7 points in the first half. Hell, Philip Dorsett caught an amazing touchdown in that game. And even still, I know everyone likes to talk about, oh, but D Ford offside, or, oh, you know, the muff punt thing that Julian Edelman will go on record by saying he never touched. But, like, Tom Brady was just like, it's like, you know what, it's like, now you're about to watch a master at work. That was Tom in that overtime.
Yeah.
But everyone likes to focus on, oh, but Mahomes couldn't beat him.
No.
And the other thing that's Super Bowl, I still
kind of look at that now as like the Josh Allen Mahomes thing, where yes. It's like Josh Allen is so elite, he's so good, but he's yet to get past Mahomes. That was Tom and Mahomes for so long. Like Mahomes was incredible. He was his quarterback, but he could never get past Tom.
The one thing I also want to think about too with that year is my dad's abruptly, he's going to hear this, but what happens if they play the Saints in that Super Bowl and we get Brady versus Breeze in Atlanta? That's just the thing to think about, where it's like, does he able to stop? Because remember, that's like, it was like when you think peak New Orleans Saints post Super Bowl, it was that season where, you know, because I remember that Saints season where Alshon Jeffery had the ball go through his hands, Marshawn Lattimore game winning pick. Obviously, the missed pass interference call. But then that year too, because of this whole thing, oh, is Brady going to get six? Drew's going for number two. It's just this, like they're so. I hate doing this with the NFL, but there are so many what ifs for that, to where, like, you know, that it just is what it is. But then with the documentary after Tom left, the part that I really hated where it was, hey, Brady wins the Super Bowl, and then they show the one visible clip of Belichick getting pissed off and whipping the phone. I think it was against Buffalo, you know, where it's just like, oh, and then he went, did this and this and this, where I feel like now with Patriots fans, a lot of them are starting to realize, like, hey, we're back to here, and there's a large portion of the NFL world that if we never win another championship again, no one's going to bat an eye.
They'll be thrilled.
Yeah.
I think I was writing a piece today about, because, you know, with Devin McCourty and Rodney Harrison's comments today, there was one by Kyle Van Noy that he put out. Let me quickly find it. That basically was, here we go. Yeah. He was doing a Q&A, I guess he was like waiting for a flight. So he was like, ask me questions on, Twitter and I'll answer them. And one was, were you asked to be interviewed for the Dynasty Doc? And he goes, no, I wasn't. And I was mad annoyed at first, but I'm glad they didn't because it looks trashy now.
The other one with that too is like no Hightower at all.
No Hightower. Like there was so much. And again, this is the part that where it's like, we had the Putin story. We had the Trump story. We had the TB12 commercial, like all of that could have been eliminated and we could have heard from like so many other players. And I think that was kind of like the hope for a lot of people was to hear that, and it just wasn't done. I think another person after this question asked Van Noy if he had like seen any of it actually, and he goes like two episodes. Like And this is a guy who was like crucial for a lot of this time. Like he was on the team. He was part of that. He got two Super Bowls with them. Like to only watch two episodes of something that you were such a large part of is baffling, but it makes sense because I get why these players are annoyed. Like as much as, you know, I love Dante Stallworth, but I think there were some times that we didn't need to hear from him as much.
A little too much Stallworth.
And it was, you know, there were some players that they really shined a light on. And some, I think the earlier episodes were really well done. Those, I think, when it was truly a clean slate for everyone, when it was talking about the team as the team.
Yes.
Before Tom Brady was like, you know, after that third, even at, going into that third Super Bowl, yes, he was on this pedestal, whatever it was. But it did feel like they were truly a team. It wasn't about Bill and Tom. It was, you know, about everyone. Those were really well done. I think it started to go fall down episode 7 and on.
Yes.
When it became too much about, which it was a huge storyline, this bad dynamic. But it's like, even with that bad dynamic, how many Super Bowls did you win? Like there were so many players who won other Super Bowls who deserved the opportunity to talk and didn't get that. And yeah, that was just mine. I give him credit for the Spygate episode was well done. I think the handling of the Aaron Hernandez episode was, you know, considering how harsh of a topic that is, I think that was well done. And I even don't think they did a terrible job with Deflategate when it was talking about Deflategate. But when things transition to talk about those other things, that's when it goes downhill.
That's exactly it. Because like the first few episodes, like hearing from like Lawyer Malloy, hearing from Willie, from Mike Vrabel, Teddy Bruschi, Ty Law.
Vrabel also, wasn't in this one, right? I don't think Vrabel, we didn't hear from Vrabel, anything.
I think it was like a little clip. I don't think it was too much. I think it was 1-4 somewhere in there. Okay. But even too, like the offensive lineman that was Tom's college roommate and the Tech Mobile stuff. I'm blanking on his name. Like and also too, the fact that they gave Drew Bledsoe his flowers.
Yes.
Ernie Adams. Just him coming back. It's just it's like that, I know this would be really weird to say, but it's like that, like, adorable old man thing with him, where it's just like, this guy who knows so much about football for years, we're always wondering, who is he? Hey,
but you also want to run through a wall for him, like, especially in those early episodes when he's talking, you're like, oh my God, this guy's awesome.
I'm driving, like, and also too, talking about, like, oh, I'm driving in, like, my, like, 1996 car, yeah. He easily can afford a better car. It's just like, that's a true football guy stuff right there.
About where Tom, when he was living in Ty Law's old, was a house or condo or whatever it was with like the, you know, with the roommates or whatever, like that to me was so fun to hear about Tom like, before he was Tom.
Like, did you know that if you smash your foot hard enough, it's going to reset the Nintendo when you're losing a Tecmo Bowl, like things like that. Like even
that was awesome though. But that's the part of the dynasty. Like I'm going to remember. And that's what was done so well.
And even my favorite, I still think my favorite scene from the entire thing was when Tom Brady, Lawyer Malloy and Ty Law are out for dinner. And he's like, I'm carrying this team on the way. And they're like, all right, Rook. Like, you know, to him, you don't have to be like, yeah, you know, everything's fine, everything's this. But then to them, it's like, all right, Rook. Like, you know, like, it's like in their heads, they're like, yeah, there's no way this guy's doing this. Let's see what this Rook does. And then carries them there. And then the thing with this whole dynasty, too, is, and like, there's all this with football as well, where there's so much of like butterfly effects to where it's like, one little change in time can like change like everything that happened. Like, you know, for as much people like to say, oh, you know, they won the first Super Bowl because apparently they had the plays, or the second one, there's no excuses. But then like how number four, like even getting to hear Malcolm Butler's whole thing of like, you know, hey, he's looking over here a lot. Like I said, I stood up and applauded when they did the Malcolm Ghost segment. If I have to give this whole dynasty rating all 10 episodes, I would say like a 7, you know, like it's not, it could have been a lot better. I didn't view it as terrible because I knew we were not going to get 10 episodes of the Patriots are the greatest, the Patriots are the best, 20 years of excellence and dominance. But I feel like a lot of people thought we were going to get that. That's why I say that. But all in all, I feel like too, it was very done for non-Patriots fans, like the ones who want to see the peel behind the curtain in the bad way as compared to the good way of it.
But I don't think that it was advertised right, if that was the meaning behind it. Because my thing with it is that it was, you know, the Dynasty book was, yes, it went over the hard times, but I also feel like it was in some ways a celebration. This felt nothing like I said.
Book was better than the movie.
Yeah, 110%. I mean, that's always the case, guys. Let's be real. Yeah. But, and as you can see, I'm a reader. So I always think books are better than the movies. But my issue, I guess, with it was like, I do think when you win 6 Super Bowls, you deserve your flowers. And I think those were given in some of the earlier episodes. But that Atlantis comeback Super Bowl and, you know, that Super Bowl specifically, I think it was done fairly well. But, you know, you talk about everything, you know, the way that I think about it, the way the first episodes were done, I'm having trouble kind of like putting this into words. I almost wish they used some of that for that Atlanta Super Bowl, the comeback one, because that was a historic, historic moment to, you know, I like those. That's like a New England fan. Like, we all remember where we were when. Like, I can visualize that whole game in my mind and replay, like, where I was, who I was with, the conversations that I was having, things like that. And at that point in the documentary, it was really, that was when it started to get a little more negative.
Yeah.
I do just wish, I get that it's not going to be all, you know, sunshine and rainbows. Like, that, no football team is ever all sunshine and rainbows.
No.
However, that being said, I do think it took too negative of a spin. And that the interviews that started to come out towards the end were way, way too negative. I do wish that it was a little bit more of a celebration rather than almost like a complete, you know, towards the end, it really was like a dig at one person. And it didn't, you know, besides that one comment I mentioned, because, you know, I was looking back at my notes and there was a comment Kraft made where it was, you know, because of the benching of Malcolm Butler against the Eagles. That's, you know, everyone's like, that's why we lost that Super Bowl.
And I don't like to say that.
Again, and that's how I feel. It's a what-if situation. Malcolm
Butler could have gone. What if Zachary Sneed was ruled down? What if Corey Clement was ruled out? I can go on for days about that Super Bowl.
Exactly. There's so many what-ifs. And I think Malcolm Butler should have played. I don't necessarily agree with the call. But I don't know if Kraft saying, I completely, it's 100% on him. For that Super Bowl.
But even to like the stuff where it's just like, oh, like Danny Amendola, who obviously is very critical of Bill, does this whole like, you know, oh, but you know, he threw for this many yards and a loss and we still lost. How was that? Like, people don't remember Tom Brady was strip sacked on like one of the very last plays of the Super Bowl. This wasn't like a New York Giants situation where it was. Because if this was like a New York Giants situation, you know, where it was he missed the throw, then you can do that. But for as good a game Tom Brady had, Atlanta just was a step ahead. Atlanta, there's a reason why Atlanta.
Eagles, right? This would be the Eagles.
I'm getting my birds mixed up. It's been a long week. It's the mixing up of birds here, folks. But like with Philadelphia, you know, they ran the Philly special. Because even to like with Super Bowl 51, because we can do that. It's the same thing where what's the one play that was showcased a lot and was getting ready to be front and center on the cover of the Boston Globe? Tom Brady falling down after Robert Alford slipped by him on his way to the house for a pick six. Because I even remember seeing a documentary about that where they interviewed all the writers. Like, that's where I first discovered Doug Kaya, because they interviewed them basically where it was like Atlanta Falcons reporters, like I think it's the Times, the Journal Times, like in Atlanta, or the Journal Time Constitution. And you have Kaya, who I think was still with Nesson or the Globe at the time. I'm not too sure. Probably Nesson. But then, like, how they're saying, like, hey, we have all these stories done, and how they have this on a dime, just drop it, because look at what the Patriots are doing. Like, even how I mentioned, so you know how everyone likes to talk about Malcolm Butler and Tom Brady with Super Bowl 51 and 49? Dante Hightower is a sole responsible reason for winning those two Super Bowls. 51 strip sack, I say that. Without that, they don't win the game. And 49, he is the one who tackled Marshawn at the 1 yard line. Not a lot of people pay attention to that.
That's very, very true. Even I knew it, but, like, forgot about it in the moment when we talk about it.
And it was just a play call of all of a sudden of, like, hey, he got him down, and they figured, I guess what went through Seattle's head was, oh, he couldn't get it the first time, he's not going to get it the second time. Even though I feel like if second down was incomplete, they're probably running it up the middle again with Marshawn. But that's neither here nor there, because it was 9 years ago, and the Patriots won that Super Bowl in all its glory. But let's end on a positive note, because obviously we're talking about the Patriots in the draft. And I saw you wrote an article about Gerard Mayo's strategy going into the draft. So if you want to touch on a little bit more of that for our, you know, viewers, listeners, wherever you're getting this podcast, what do you where do you think Gerard's truly going with this?
Yeah, I mean, he's emphasized quarterback is a priority. That being said, there's one part about it. Listen, we know that there are three quarterbacks who are most likely going to go off the board with the first three picks. I think, and I said them earlier, it's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May.
Yep.
What he alluded to, I almost felt like was like maybe one of those isn't the right fit for the Patriots. I'm not sure. It was just like, you know, if the fit's not there, then we're going to look elsewhere or we're going to, you know, consider other options. And that's what confused me, because I think anyone, and again, I don't know, I'm not a GM, probably for a very good reason, but I think any one of them could be a very solid opportunity, especially, you know, you have a veteran in the room, Jacoby Brissett. I actually like keeping Bailey Zappe on the roster because he's someone who's been in the room for a few years, whereas Brissett's coming back in. Zappe kind of knows what's been done the past few years. And I also like that he spent so much time working with the receiver room. I think having him as like a practice squad quarterback is the way to go for him this year. And having the opportunity to elevate him with injuries and all that. I'm still a little bit on the Zappe train, not as a starter or anything, but I like him on the Patriots. I always have. I think
pretty he's like, case of emergency.
Yeah, that's what I like about him. I think
or we play in the AFC North.
oh, get that on a t-shirt.
Joe Montana against the AFC North.
There you go. So basically he alluded to, it seems to quarterback as the main priority, but he's also not ruling out a trade. He actually told, I think it was Mike Reese put that out recently, that he's not ruling out that. And there, you know, anything's on the table right now going into the draft. I think the most likely outcome is that third pick rolls around and the Patriots have a new quarterback. That is the most likely situation. But as we know in football, anything is possible. And listen, yep. If the Patriots get an offer for that third round pick that they can't turn down, I mean, there would be situations where a team's going to come to them with this, like, once in a lifetime offer because they need that pick, then it's something to consider. Because there's Michael Penix Jr., there's Bo Nix, there are quarterbacks that are expected to fall down a little bit who could be solid options going in.
There's also Joe Milton, who, to quote Alex Barth, if you need Joe Milton to throw it 80 yards, he's going to throw it 80 yards. If you need him to throw it 5 yards, he's still going to chuck it 80 yards.
80 yards.
Heard on this very podcast too, he said that. But the way I look at that whole thing is, out of all the options that are below the three, Michael Penix Jr. is my number one.
Yeah.
He is my number, like, he is my QB4 in this draft. I know, because I know J.J. McCarthy's done this, I know he's done that, but like, what this talent for Michael Penix Jr. is, and also too, what he did in the Sugar Bowl, because I feel like everyone looks at the national championship for him and goes, oh, you know, he did this. If you look at his Sugar Bowl film, and they had lost that game to Texas, I guarantee you he's going in the top 10. Guarantee you. Some GMs go look at that film and go, he's doing this. But because they played in the championship, because, you know, they didn't have the best game and he was getting just ragdolled around the entire time, it is what it is. My more intriguing thing for the Patriots is round 2 and 3, because round 4 is just kind of like, you know, you're able to fill in the cracks. There's not going to be anything of need. It's going to be, hey, get another tight end. Get a swing tackle you can maybe play, because and I'm blanking on his first name, but Okafor, I don't know if he's going to be the starter at left tackle, but he's there for depth. But my whole thing
he's primarily played at right tackle his whole career. He's more of a right tackle then, but obviously Michael Wenu is going to be your right tackle going into the season.
Yeah.
I think it's going to, you know, I think drafting, they're going to have to take a tackle at some point because there's not really any free agents still available for left tackle. But worst case, I mean, if you work on him all throughout training camp as a left tackle, I do think by the season he could potentially be ready. And there was one thing Trent Brown said about that I love, which is the versatility of being able to play at either spot, I think is actually a very important thing for tackles. So it'd be really cool to see that happen.
Yes, exactly. Like, my other thing too with it is just like for day two and day three, like day two, my goal for day two is like, look, get out with a wide receiver because there's still going to be a wide receiver available. We've seen a lot of good ones going around too. And there's also Kingsley, who I'm blanking on his last name, from BYU.
His last name's long. I know it.
It is. But Patrick Paul from Houston's the other one I've been looking at because I've been seeing him on a lot of Patriots mocks. Mm-hmm. Because with day three, like I said, you can do the tight end. You can also take – if they want to double-dip a quarterback, if they want to double-dip at the tackle position, be my guest. Absolutely. Fill in those gaps. They also have a good amount of depth now at the offensive line with like Nick Vinette coming in. Jake Andrews, like, I'm not rooting for him, but like I really need to see him take that next step, because I was saying this right now, if David Andrews retired, I would have been banging the drum to get Mitch Morse on New England.
Yeah.
Not Deion Dawkins duping us and re-signing in Buffalo, where I really wanted him to do that. After I saw that thing, and I learned he's a master troll, and he re-signed a deal in Buffalo, where I'm just like, God damn it. But the next month is going to be very long. It's going to be just so many speculations. It's going to, like, because the next few weeks is really only for, like, the true football fan at heart. And by that, what I mean is, like, listening to updates about, like, what's going on at the league meetings, what's going on with the owners, what's going on with rule changes. Your average football fan is not going to watch that and go, like, oh, what's going on here? But, like, for the next month, whenever you hear something, this is mainly the Patriots fans. And I want to say this. Whenever I refer to a fan base now, I always say Twitter. Or X. You know, for Patriots Twitter out there. You're going to see a lot of different takes. You're going to see a lot of different opinions. But at the end of the day, all I ask for you to do is whatever happens, just trust the process of what's going on. It's going to take a while. This season's not going to be fun. But you know what? Maybe they surprise some people. Maybe it's this magical thing that happens, like me watching Grand Canyon right now potentially beating Alabama. You just don't know what's going to happen. It's a very love-hate relationship with this time of the year, if I'm being honest with you, where it's just like, at this point, it's just like, look, once the league meetings are done, once Easter's done, just get me to the draft.
Yep. Couldn't have said it any better myself.
You know, just take everything with a grain of salt. That's all I ask. Just, you see, like, when people are reporting, I'm like, oh, Patriots could trade back, or, oh, like, they might do this, they might do that. There are so many smoke screens that are thrown out this time of year because every GM's trying to throw off the other one to what's going to happen. And I'll say the same thing for you as well. It would have to be a offer where there's at least two firsts and a player of significance and a position of need coming back to the Patriots, in my opinion, in order to trade that pick. They're not just going to do what the Chicago Bears did, because they're not in that position now to where next year, hey, there's this promising young quarterback, because look, Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel are the first two that come to mind, and Quinn Ewers, they're not what this year's top three is. So if you have faith in this year's guy, just shut up and take it.
Preach.
Anyway, guys, that's going to wrap it up here for YWC Football Talk's 288th episode. One quick announcement. Like I said, guys, we're going to be off for a little bit. We will be back next week, but more wrestling related, because obviously it's that wonderful time of the year. WrestleMania is right around the corner. But for football, we're going to be back in a couple weeks, so just stay tuned for then. But for myself, A to Z Sports, Miss Sophie Weller with two E's and two R's, because one E and one R was taken. See you guys next time here. All right? Take care, and remember,
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.